This is member supported.
WPFW, Washington.
Good evening. It's a rainy Friday here in the capital of Washington, D.C., and I'm here with my man on the board, Mr. David Kelly, making the show News Views happen on another Friday, on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. on WPFW. And if you are way out there, you know, maybe in a space shuttle or at some ice station in Antarctica or something like that, you can go online because we are live streaming at WPFW.org. 89.3 FM, Washington, D.C., or WPFW.org online live from 6 to 7 p.m. every Friday evening, and that includes today. My name's Garland Nixon. And needless to say, there have been some significant events going on in our world here the last couple days, and the one that strikes me, that hits right at the heartstrings, the one that really brings some emotion, is the death of one Nelson Mandela. And let me say this, and Mark Levine is here, and let me just say this: I don't feel sad that he died. He's 95.
He was.
And, you know, we all, you know, I would hope that I could be blessed to live to make it to 95. And I think, you know, I was watching on TV, and there were a bunch of South Africans, and they were kind of dancing. You know, they were on TV. They were kind of going around a circle, and they were dancing and chanting something. I don't know what it was because I don't understand the language. But I did see notice, you know, kind of a level of celebration there. And I think that's that with when someone like him passes away, rather than sorrow, I think there's a celebration that human beings can stand up, that human beings can do wonderful things and can be great examples and change the world. What do you think, Mark?
Well, you know, in New Orleans, they celebrate the death. They don't not really celebrate the death. They celebrate the life at the time of someone's death. And I think you're right. When a man is 95 years old, it's only fitting that we celebrate his life. If someone dies at age 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, then you're going to be much more mournful. But, you know, God gives us only so many years on this earth. And
he was sick for 6 months. I think people were kind of...
Yeah, I think they're kind of expecting it. So I think this is a time when we should celebrate his life, his legacy, talk about what he did and what it means for the future, and not mourn his passing too much except to say that a great man has left us.
And let me give you the number, because there hasn't been any opportunity for our callers to call in on WPFW. There's been great, really, really good stuff. There's been some great programming today regarding Nelson Mandela. But, I'm sure there are people who want to call in and make comments about the passing of Mandela and about him, and not necessarily about the passing, but about his life, you know, what you thought about him. So let me give you the number, 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. Mark Levine and myself, Garland Nixon, are here. We're talking about Nelson Mandela, and I happen to have some quotes from Nelson Mandela here, and so I'm going to read one or two of them to you, but it's brief. But very, very powerful stuff. And I think this is the most appropriate. It's to start with. And it's a quote from 1994 interview. And here's what he says: when a man has done what he considers to be his duty to his people and his country, he can rest in peace.
And I think we should – one of the things that is most admirable about Nelson Mandela is his persistence. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was in jail for 27 years. A lot of people would give up hope after 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
To be in jail for 27 years, never give up the cause, because he had all kinds of options, really, to sort of recant and stop
renounce
the movement. And he'd be out in a minute.
Yeah.
But he chose to stay in jail and to stay for the cause. And I mean, listen, there were people around him that weren't so persistent.
Yeah.
We don't need to name names unless people really want me to. But there are people who gave up, and you can understand that. There's tremendous pressure to basically
give
up the fight.
I would even say this: most people would give up. You know what I mean? Most people couldn't stand that, to see their life just – I mean, let's face it. He was, what, in his 40s when he went to jail, and in his late 60s when he
thought it was a life sentence.
Yeah, and he accepted it as a life sentence.
Yeah, he accepted it as if this was his fate in life, and that's all he was going to do was fight and die in prison trying – he was willing to accept that.
And all he would be in prison would be kind of an example for people. He would be an inspiration. He would be some sort of martyr.
And he was. And while he was in prison, of course, he was an inspiration for South Africans. He was an inspiration for people worldwide. They visited him in his prison cell. That's one of the reasons why they really couldn't do away with him, because he was constantly having visitors. And he shows the power, really, of the international community, because none of these big tasks are done alone. He did a tremendous job.
If I remember correctly, when he first went in for a long time, he was in a cell, a small cell, no window, no plumbing of any kind.
Yeah, solitary confinement.
And he got like one magazine or something to read for 30 minutes a month, and one visitor every 6 months or something. I mean, for many, many years, it was a punishment. You know, kind of, as some would say, you know, a punishment worse than death. There are people who would have rather died than that. But the man stood in there, and here's what I think. You know, in my life, I have looked at Gandhi and King as the guys that I think about as, you know, very powerful leaders and world changers. And, you know, I never thought of someone that, you know, well, Gandhi and King, who do you put in with that? The reality is, as Mandela passes away and I look at him, I see him in the light of a Gandhi and King. I see him.
But there is a difference. There is a difference. Martin Luther King, Gandhi, they died all too young, of course.
Yeah.
They were assassinated. This is a man who lived to the age of 95, and he lived long enough that there's some South Africans, particularly the young ones, who actually are critical of Mandela. It's interesting. Most people in South Africa over, say, 40 and people worldwide are praising his death. A number of people, I was reading an article today about the younger South Africans that say he got us political equality, but he didn't give us economic equality.
They were born after apartheid, and they don't know what the heck they were
doing. No, but then there are people today that make the same complaint about King.
Right.
King brought political equality, but there's still not economic equality for African-Americans and for other people in the United States. And I think both King and Mandela, both heroes, both did what they could, but they show how much more difficult it is to obtain economic equality as to obtain political equality. Both tried to do both.
Right.
But they only achieved, I shouldn't say only, because they're both major achievements, but they achieved the political equality, not the
And it's
the,
like, you know, somebody
equality.
Gives you cake and you say, but, you know, wait a minute.
There's not enough frosting
or ice cream.
I don't mean to be churlish. I just mean to say that's a more difficult task.
We're going to go to our callers, but also let me add this. The other thing about him was very similar to Anwar Sadat, and that was there was a time he transitioned. He was a man who got angry, who embraced violence at one point. And then when he came out, he was the consummate nonviolent activist. So there's that model for people, which I think is very positive, of going, moving. Let me put it this way, that as a true leader and a true activist matures, they move in the direction.
And I'll tell you,
nonviolence.
South Africa really has been a model for other nations with its Truth and Reconciliation Commission. The idea that you don't just take the bad guys and kill them, because that leads to violence that lasts forever. You know, when you look at even after Rwanda, after the genocide there, they took some of the models of South Africa to say, you know, even the murderers, they didn't massacre them all, because then other people would be massacred, and then the war goes on forever. But to do as we did with Germany and Japan
and,
after their evil acts, defeated,
and
to
what,
be kind to your enemies actually can lead to
what
a
Lincoln wanted
future.
To do in the South before he was.
That's
so
exactly
let's go
right.
on.
That's right. Grant gave let Lee go and didn't massacre the Confederates or anything like that.
Okay, so let's start with line one. Remember, 202-588-0893. If you're out there, 202-588-0893. We've got some open lines. We're talking about Mandela, and we want to hear from our weekly News View listeners. We're starting with Mason. Mason, welcome to WPFW.
Yes, I'm tired of this hypocrisy and all this phoniness, these white liberals and these fake people. Nelson Mandela should have retaliated against them white racists. Did the United States forgive Al-Qaeda? Human beings retaliate against people who are doing them wrong. All you phony white liberals and all these black kids and Nelson Mandela is full of it. This man, he let his country down. He should have nationalized the banks. He should have nationalized every industry and threw all those white settlers out of there because they destroyed, because they burnt, they killed, they blew up people. And y'all phony white liberals is praising this. When they going to forgive Al-Qaeda and the Taliban? You know how they going to do that? Have a nice day, you phonies.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Mason. Let me start by saying this. It's kind of hard for me to be a phony white white liberal, Mark.
Yeah.
But I guess you could be
a phony black liberal.
I was about to say. But here's the thing about it. If you listen to Mason, I'll make this quick because
I want to respond to Mason.
But let me just say this. I understand how people who have violence perpetrated against them feel justified.
Absolutely.
And feel angry. Because
Absolutely.
If something happens to me, I feel angry and I feel justified. That's what I think is so powerful about the Kings and the Gandhis, and that is they're stronger emotionally than people like me and people like Mason.
Like most people.
I'm not mad at Mason. I understand
what
he's saying, and he feels justified, and you can surely make the argument, okay, yeah, they were, you know, you stepped on my foot, I can step on your foot.
Well,
but
more than that.
It's more powerful.
Massacres and
yeah, but you know, I mean, for my point.
Yeah.
But it's more power. But those, he knew, one thing he knew, there would be more lives lost, and there'd be more innocent lives lost, and there'd be more innocent black South Africans and white,
you know,
he didn't want that.
I look at the example of Zimbabwe, which used to be called Rhodesia, which was an even more oppressive white regime. The blacks came in, Robert Mugabe came in, they largely kicked out or killed all the whites there, did largely what Mason wants to do, and then Mugabe became a dictator, and the black people of Zimbabwe, I think it's fair to say, for all the troubles that still exist in South Africa, they're better off than the blacks of Zimbabwe, who are in a nation ruled by a dictatorial regime
that did not achieve.
So we have seen examples in history, many, in fact, most examples in history, where the vanquished, you know, the people who persecuted others, The victims become the perpetrators.
The revolutionary is worse than what they
look. I mean, you can go back to France, right? The French Revolution, right? The revolution killed the kings, massacred them, guillotined, blood in the streets, nobles, kings all died, and then those people were overthrown, and it led to a cycle of violence.
Yeah, and the other
that
part
doesn't mean that
this.
I don't understand the emotion.
Right, I understand the emotions, but what you see is this:
we didn't do it to Germany and Japan. How awful they were.
Yeah, how you act is about what's inside of you. So if Mugabe could massacre people, it was because there was the propensity inside of him to do that. So when he took power, he already had the ability to match. So if you kill people in one that you say
and
are your enemy,
in no way defends the white Rhodesians.
Right. No, it doesn't. But it just says if you have it in you to kill people in one for because you're mad at them, then if you get mad at another group, you certainly got it in you to kill them too. And I think that's what makes it so powerful. In fact, I think Mason's call demonstrates even more what a powerful man and what
really,
a respectable
man. Really,
this
was the argument between Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. Well, Malcolm X later really came onto King's side. But for most of his life, until the end of his life, Malcolm X very much believed in retribution.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that would have succeeded in America.
But one thing you do know, you know what you know? A lot of innocent lives would have been lost. So the fewer innocent lives lost, the better. Clay, welcome to WPFW.
Hi. Nice I come behind your previous caller. I'll just kind of be blunt. The previous caller was basically kind of a wolf ticket. He had a lot of spit and fire. He had never even been to South Africa, and he doesn't really know what color you are to call you whatever he wants to call you. But all that being said, I'm actually calling because at one point you commented that when you had seen some TV reports about the death of Nelson Mandela and how it was being received in South Africa, you noticed some people singing, dancing, and you said, well, I didn't understand what they were saying because I don't understand their language, but they seemed happy. Well, see, I know you meant well, but for some reason I couldn't help but thinking that that comment was a little bit dismissive because maybe really the order to understand Mandela's life, you might want to learn a little bit of the language of the tribes in South Africa, because he didn't just keep himself alive in Robben Island for 27 years. He didn't go out and get his own groceries while he was there. He didn't write letters to himself.
Mm-hmm.
He always referred to that his struggle was the people's struggle. And so those people who are singing about his life and death, I think that's the reason he made it to age 95. So once again, I feel like somehow from our American perspective, we're just a little dismissive because we're just a little ignorant of the depth of the struggle of African people oppressed in their own country, in their own land.
Well, thank you very much. Clay, that was Clay.
Clay,
right?
Yeah.
And I certainly understand that, and let me try to clarify it a little better for you. And that is, when my mother died, she was 88. And she had been sick, very sick, for a lot of months. And with my family, I noticed with me and my sisters, we weren't really terribly overwhelmed with grief. We talked about what she did and the struggles and
You've
her business.
You've probably been grieving for years during our sickness.
Right, and we talked about it. When we got together, we were smiling and laughing and talking. I remember the time this happened. So we really had somewhat of a joy about her life and how blessed we were to have her as our mother. Okay, and that's where that's the context of that. And that is, sometimes it's been my experience when a person who's been around for a long time and people have a lot of respect for and passes away at a very late stage in life, people don't, you know, granted, the people of South Africa, no doubt, feel some pain of missing and probably a lot. But I'm just commenting on what I saw on TV, and it was like CNN or whatever, and the people were kind of dancing. They were all going around in a circle. I don't know if it was true. I don't know what was going on. But I did see a lot of smiles, and I did see the guy that was being interviewed talk about, you know, the people basically talking about these wonderful things that this man did and showing so much respect. What are your thoughts on that, Mark?
I don't have much more to add. I mean, I think, again, it's sort of what we said at the beginning, that I think there's a big difference between when someone dies at age 95 and someone dies at age 45. That, you know, when someone's assassinated, there's a tremendous shock and loss and grief.
Gandhi was assassinated.
Right, and Martin Luther King as well. Men assassinated in their 40s, mm-hmm. assassinated in the prime of their life, in the prime of recognizing how much good they could still have done. You know, when a man lives to the age of 95, I don't think anyone thought that Mandela was going to achieve some particular greatness in addition to his already existing greatness in the next 10 years of his life. It was the end of his life, and he lived a good life. So,
and if you watch the news,
I would say he lived a good life. He by the end of his life, it was a good life. I should say.
And if you watch the news and you watch the tone of people who are reporting on it, I think there is a celebratory feeling of his life.
It's more
what
respect
a great man.
Than grief.
No, I'm not. People aren't standing around saying, "Oh my gosh, he's gone." They're saying, "How blessed were we that he was here."
Right.
Who do we have next? I'm sure we've got someone next. Tesfa, once again, we got a little bit open line, 202-588-0895. Tesfa, welcome to WPFW.
Good evening, my friend.
Good evening,
Tesfa. Good evening, Tesfa.
We celebrate Mandela's life because not only what he said and took as his mission, but what he did and what he suffered for is unity of humanity in justice.
Mm-hmm.
Not in injustice, but in justice. Unity of humanity in justice. But now, the current world doesn't have that unity in justice. There is so much injustice all around the world, especially in Africa. There is even an apartheid system in Ethiopia, black-on-black apartheid, supported by the United States and the rest of the West. Let me tell you, there is so much land grab by foreigners. Land grab in Africa, it's almost becoming like the apartheid system.
Mm-hmm.
Capital coming in, pushing away the African.
China's doing a lot in Africa.
Economy.
And corporations, multinational corporations, are probably the worst actors.
But they're both.
And they tend to ally with corrupt dictatorships. Here's something I think that is useful from Mandela's, at least for me, to take from Mandela's legacy, is that you can't isolate and look in just one corner of the world and say, there's South Africa, there's white people oppressing black people, that's evil, that's wrong, we're going to close our eyes to all the other injustices of the world. I think Tess was right. You and I may disagree on what to do about the situation in Syria or Libya or wherever, but the idea that when humanity suffers, we all should take notice that when tens of thousands of people are being massacred, it shouldn't matter whether it's Rwanda or Syria or Libya or Kosovo or Armenia. or the Holocaust, we need to recognize our common humanity. And I agree that Tetzler's right, and also that Mandela looked beyond the borders of South Africa.
Yeah, yes, yes, he did. And the borders of South Africa looked beyond him because the entire world looked
beyond racial issues. Mandela, for example, South Africa is the first country in Africa to accept same-sex marriage. Now, Mandela didn't have to fight that fight. He had more than enough on his hands with the political inequality of the black South Africans and the economic inequality, which still exists to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he took on the issue of gay rights, again, and women's rights. And he wasn't – I think it's very important that – and I think Tesla recognized this is what he's saying, whether in Ethiopia or anywhere else, that you not just look and say Mandela helped black South Africans. Because he was much bigger than that, just like Martin Luther King and Gandhi were bigger than their individual. Obviously, Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement, Gandhi and the Indian Revolution against England, but they spoke to broader things than just their own peoples.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting that all three of them, you know, they led a group of oppressed people, but you know, both Gandhi and you know, the dynamic for both Gandhi and Mandela, you know, were that they were, you know, a majority people who, you know, they lived there for, you know, hundreds, 100,000 years, whatever the case may be. And then the European settlers came in and basically said, oh, it's ours now and you're a second class citizen. And both of them stood up basically with a smile on their face. You know, what's interesting is that the powerful leaders such as these, when taken to court, I mean, if you read the things that Gandhi or Martin Luther King or Mandela said when they were in court, they basically went to court and said, I'm doing what I should do. I'm doing the right thing.
And with very little violence, I should say.
Yeah.
There's a little bit more in South Africa than in India, but really very little. The heart of the issue, the apartheid regime was largely brought down through sanctions. Worldwide sanctions movement, and I think sometimes if you have to overthrow the violence, maybe you have to. But if you could do it without violence, I think you're more likely to have a lasting, peaceful.
Let me read a quote from Mandela, and this was after he had been convicted in 1962 and sentenced to 5 years of hard labor. And how many of us could say this? He said, "If I had my time over, I would do the same, and so would any man who dares call himself a man." So, you know, I mean, when we think about that, you know, it sounds valiant, but how many of us, to us, it's theoretical, you know, when you say, oh, boy, if I was standing in the face of hard labor, years of hard labor in South Africa. No. When it's no longer theoretical, when a person's sitting there looking at, and in South Africa, when you, in those types of jails, you know, the odds that you're going to come out alive are not all that high. The probability is that you'll die in prison from beatings or whatever the case may be. Well, who do we have next? Let's see. Mike, welcome to WPFW.
Mike? Yeah, good evening.
Good evening, Mike.
Yeah, well, I second the first man. I find that any time that black people want to liberate themselves, guess what? Some of y'all Negroes want to follow the red, white, and blue once you get on the radio station. Anytime black people want liberation, you know what? I find that we always got people... It's on the radio station that's paid by the government to tell you to stand down and go the peaceful way. You're never getting anywhere by being peaceful with white folks. White folks have always dominated murder, rape, and destruction upon people of color in the world. So whatever you say about Mandela might have been told, you know what, when we let you out here, you better keep your mouth shut or else you're going back. So it didn't nothing change in Shantytown. It's still just as bad as it is when he went in. As it is today, nothing has changed over there besides they got more gay rights. Thank you and have a great day.
Well, you know, that's certainly the perspective of a couple of our callers. And as I said, I mean,
he's right about economic inequality. Yeah. It still exists. It's still a major problem in South Africa.
And I think that that what that demonstrates is that how much more difficult it is for a leader who says, I want to do this thing in a nonviolent way. Because, you know, just as, you know, there were a lot of people in the United States who had valid, you know, arguments saying to Martin Luther King, no, you know, we're being treated horrible and I want to fight back. Malcolm X said, you know, I'll be peaceful with people that are peaceful with me, things of that nature. These people have have valid positions.
Oh, I could certainly understand someone going to a Klansman's home and burning the whole thing down. But in addition to the Klansman and being killed, they'd probably kill the
children. And you know what would happen? Then the Klansmen would get together and they'd go to a black neighborhood
right.
and they'd
burn
the house of some innocent people.
Right.
And you would have a lot of innocent people. And I think that's the thing about it. And that is we see based on people that are calling here, that kind of anger is very difficult. It's like a fire. It's hard to put out. And how much more difficult it had to be for Nelson Mandela. Can you imagine how hard it was for him in South Africa with people, I mean, the Sharpeville massacre, with these horrible things happening?
Right.
I guarantee there were people saying, we have a right to strike back. We should go back and kill these people. And it was probably hard for him to say, well, you know, yeah, we can.
And I think they did have a right to strike back.
Yeah.
I think they did have a right
Absolutely
to kill the massacre. The question is, was that the best thing for South Africa in the long run?
Right. And was that the best thing for humanity in the long run? And this, and people like Gandhi, people like Mandela, you know, they're about humanity. They're about human rights. They're about they're bigger than retaliation and anger. And you know, holding resentment and anger is like poisoning yourself and waiting for someone else to die. See, you're carrying that with you. That's why it's best to get rid of it. Okay, so let's see who's next. And I'm not belittling these callers in their anger. I'm not saying, you know, I don't understand it. I do understand it. I don't feel the same. He didn't feel the same, but I understand. And
well, I think he felt the anger. He just channeled it into a different – he used his rage in a different way, not to foment violence, but to foment action.
Right. That's it. He used it to fight. I mean, he fought in a peaceful – he was the peaceful – the way of
different
the
– Different tactics. Same goal.
Wasn't there a book, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior? Who are we next? We're at Eleanor. Eleanor, welcome to BFW.
Hi.
Hi, Eleanor.
Hi. How you doing? I have a cold, so bear with me. You know, I'm listening to the two brothers who called and they're angry, and I don't blame them. There are two Mandelas. There was the pre-jail, pre-27 years in jail Mandela, and then there was the old man who was released. Of course, he was toned down. I look at myself now as a middle-aged woman, and look at myself back in the 70s when I was protesting everything, going to everybody. I can't do it now. I mean, physically, it's just impossible to keep up that pace. So, yes, not that my ideals have changed, but my methodology has changed, and I want young people to come behind me and do it. But, you know, I think there were no young Mandelas to pick up the fight. And what Mandela should have done when he became president, he should have nationalized every gold mine. He should have nationalized every diamond mine. He should not have been still there taking African diamonds and African gold. Those should have belonged to the people, not to these Dutch companies and these Dutch people who took the place in the first place. So no one is saying that Mandela should have come and he should have got the army together, should have had all black men in the army, killing all white people. Of course not. I mean, didn't need to do that. He was the president. He had the ability to nationalize what economically belonged to Africans. What you've got now is a South Africa that politically, so to speak, is ruled by Africans, but you have an economy that is ruled by Afrikaners. And the problem is the same as it is here. Wall Street rules America, not White House, not the White House, Wall Street. And so you've got the same thing there. So I'm trying to figure out really what was gained. I heard this morning that there was some roads paved, and there's still Soweto. There's still major ghettos, major poverty. When the white people are as rich as they were before, as they are now.
I
really agree with you, Eleanor. It's
me too.
That I was pointing out that young people aren't celebrating Mandela in South Africa as much as the elderly are. That people over, and I'm just picking 40 as an arbitrary age, but people in their 60s and 70s who suffered under political apartheid realize how much Mandela was able to achieve. And people under 40, 30, 20 say, hey, there's still Soweto. There's still the slums. There's still tremendous economic inequality. The whites have virtually all the power. There are a few blacks that have made it. They even call them black diamonds,
right,
to illustrate how separate they are from the rest of the humanity in South Africa. And there's still a major economic inequality problem in South Africa. And, nationalizing is one way to go about it. Another way I can think about it is just very, very heavy taxation, mm-hmm, on those Dutch companies so they don't have to, people say nationalize and people run away, but you tax someone at 80%. You could get a lot of that money back. But I agree. Economic inequality is still a big issue, and I don't think Mandela's revolution is done. He used to speak about political and economic inequality, but as he became president, and maybe to help pave the way for the transition, a lot of those economic issues were not met. And Eleanor's absolutely right. It's still a major problem.
Yeah, and I agree. We're going to have to take a break in a second, but I agree. I think that South Africa and a lot of those African countries that have companies coming in as a result of colonialism that got a foothold in their country, that got a foothold in their political system, that got connected to their diamond mines or oil or whatever it is, and now they're saying, okay, you can rule your country, but they're still sucking all the natural resources out. I think that South Africa and the other countries should say to those companies, I think they should, as you either nationalize them or tax them like 80 or 90% and say, oh, sure, and you do all the work and we'll tax you 90%, right, or get out of the country and
we
nationalize
them. South Africa is a democracy.
Yeah.
So there is still time to achieve this.
Yeah.
Mandela is gone, but there's still time to achieve this. It's much harder with some of the African nations that are dictatorships, where the dictator's often in bed with the corporations.
Right.
Everyone's getting rich. There it's much, much harder. But South Africa, I think, still can achieve this in the next generation.
Yeah, because you don't see anybody in the United States, over here pumping out all of our oil or whatever it is that we shouldn't even be pumping out. But whatever the case may be, running off with it, take it to another country. And I think that they should do the same thing in a nonviolent manner. But I think they should say, hey, this is our stuff.
That's right. The natural resources also belong. I hate when American corporations steal all our natural resources as well.
So scram. They're ours.
That's right.
I mean, with you. We're going to take a quick break and come back. We got some. Then we're going to get right back to our callers. The number is 202-588-0893. We're talking Nelson Mandela. Call in. Whatever your position is, we want to hear it. 202-588-0893. Be right back.
Put a smile on a child's face this holiday season. The district has the highest rate of HIV in the nation, and many D.C. children are hit hard.
Bread for the Soul is a nonprofit group dedicated to brightening the lives of D.C. children and youth impacted by the HIV/AIDS epidemic.
To help make the season joyful for these children, join WPFW, D.C. Public Libraries, the Union AFSCME, and Bread for the Soul in collecting new books and toys for these D.C. children.
Drop off toys and books at any D.C. Public Library, now through Thursday, December 12th. Volunteers are also needed for packing and delivery on Saturday, December 14th.
To help, email toysbfs@yahoo.com. That's the initials for Bread for the Soul at yahoo.com. Or call 202-421-8608. That's 202-421-8608. Happy holidays to you and yours.
89.3 FM, WPFW, your station for jazz and justice.
Welcome back to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. Garland Nixon here with
Mark Levine.
And we're talking Nelson Mandela. The show is called News Views on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Also available online, live at WPFW.org. So if you're too far out, if you can't get it, you got static coming in, you're barely scrambling to hear the signal, then you can just go into your computer and go on WPFW.org and you can listen.
And if you miss any part of any show we do, I store them all on my website, marklevinetalk.com, marklevinetalk.com. By Saturday morning, they're always up on the website. And again, if you miss this show or any other show, you can always check out what you've got.
And also live on the WPFW archive. All of the shows. If you have a show that you like to hear, go to WPFW.org, go to our archives, and you can find the show that you want. You can download it, listen to it, whatever the case may be. I would like to say, make one announcement. That is, the entire WPFW family joins with the people of the world in mourning the death of Nelson Mandela. Nightly candlelight vigils are being held at the Embassy of the Republic of South Africa from Friday, December 6th through Thursday, December 12th from 7 to 8 p.m. So nightly candlelight vigils at the Embassy of the Republic of South Africa starting Friday the 6th through Thursday the 12th from 7 to 8 p.m. You certainly want to be a part of that. The Embassy of the Republic of South Africa is 3051 Massachusetts Avenue Northwest. That's 3051 Mass Avenue Northwest from Friday, which is today, through Thursday, the 12th, 7 to 8 p.m., the Candlelight Vigil. Stay tuned to 89.3 FM, WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. Who do we have on the line next? We have, is that Doug? Doug, welcome to WPFW.
Hi, Doug.
Hi, thank you. Well, first of all, I just want to say I really appreciate your programming. This is just a perfect example of the kind of programming that you can only get on WPFW and Pacifica.
And thank you,
it's
Doug.
It's really a treasure. I'm really grateful for it. Two other things real quick. One is I really agree with your sort of opening sentiments that, you know, Nelson Mandela lived to be 95 years old, and by all accounts, he died peacefully in his own home. And I find myself thinking of Bob Marley's line from his song, "How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look?" And when you think of all the other people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King mm-hmm. and Malcolm X who were all assassinated, you know, we should all be happy that Nelson Mandela got to live to be 95 and, you know, could die knowing, you know, everything he had accomplished. It really is more of a time to celebrate his life than to be, you know, bemoaning that he died at that great age. It's one of the good stories of our time, I think, that he, you know, got to where he got to. For some of the earlier callers, I would just like to suggest that people really ought to take the time to read what Nelson Mandela and Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King and other people wrote about nonviolence and nonviolent resistance, because it is not weakness. It requires huge strength to do that. And the reason that those guys arrived at that, at nonviolence, is because that's what works. That's why they did it. Not because it's nice and,
right.
you know, and weak. It's what works. And, you know, what Buddha said 2,500 years ago, hatred is never defeated by hatred. Hatred is only defeated by love. And Gandhi and Mandela and King realized for themselves that that is actually a fact. That's true. It's not just let's be all nice. It's like if you want to get results in the long run, that is the only way you're really going to get results. And then the last thing I want to say, and I'll get off the phone, is I think we do need to beware of a tendency in the U.S. media to water down and sanitize some of what these people like Mandela did and what they represent and what they had to say. It's like with Martin Luther King, you will hear his 1963 I Have a Dream speech and that one brief passage from that speech over and over and over again. You will rarely hear Martin Luther King's 1967 speech Beyond Vietnam,
yes.
where he harshly criticized and attacked U.S. foreign policy a year before he was assassinated. And you just won't hear about that. And you look at, man, I can begin to see Nelson Mandela being turned into this nice guy, this sweet old gentleman who, you know, they pick and choose these sort of warm and fuzzy quotes from him and soften it and water it down and read what he actually had to say at the time, especially, you know, during the 1980s, the Reagan administration was providing massive support to the apartheid regime.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, we were on the wrong side of history. And Mandela was, when he came out of prison, was going to Cuba and other, you know, socialist countries to get support for the ANC, while the United States was, you know, supporting apartheid. And Mandela was very outspoken about that. And that's something you're not going to hear now in the mainstream media, is what Mandela had to say about U.S. foreign policy. That's kind of being whited out of the discourse.
Okay.
And we need to remember that stuff. We need to remember that people like Mandela and King were very harsh critics of the U.S. policy. And I think now with Mandela's passing is, you know, let's not just dwell on the negative, but let's remember that aspect of what was going on back then. There were some great wrongs done to the South African people by the United States government at that time.
A lot of great points. And, you know, for those who don't know, I mean, even when Congress overwhelmingly passed sanctions against South Africa, Ronald Reagan vetoed.
That's right.
His veto had to be overridden. I think it was 78-21 it was overridden in the Senate.
And those sanctions played a major role
and
in
Margaret
getting
Thatcher,
the apartheid regime
Margaret
to
Thatcher
give up.
Was a supporter of the, you know, Reagan and Thatcher were both strong supporters of the apartheid government.
That's right.
You know, so
the other thing is interesting to me is talking about Martin Luther King's "I Have a Dream" speech. They always play the end of the speech where you know your children of every color could be sitting
the soft
together.
And fuzzy part.
Right. On the 50th anniversary, I played the first part of the "I Have a Dream" speech, the mm-hmm. same speech, but the first part where he's harshly criticizing the segregationist governor of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
That part of the same "I Have a Dream" speech is rarely played. It's not that long a speech. I played it in full because he ended on that flourish, which actually wasn't even his notes. This was just the most beautiful or poetic part just came out of his mind as he was talking. But the written text of the speech and the beginning of the speech is very harshly critical of segregation in very strong terms.
You don't hear his powerful, strong support for organized labor. You don't hear any of the quotes or talks about organized labor, which he was very much in favor
Let's
of.
Never forget he was shot at a sanitation worker strike.
Yeah, so, you know.
For higher wages.
No doubt. Let's remember that
when people are striking today for higher wages, whether it's Walmart or McDonald's or wherever.
Yeah, and what's important and what that caller said is let's not forget that the people, some of the very same people who are, you know, boo-hooing about Mandela passing away and saying, oh, what a man. When he was alive, they were opposed. Some of these right-wingers were opposing him. They were supporting the apartheid sanctions, and today they're revisionists, and all of a sudden he's a wonderful person. Well, he was a no good commie when they were alive, and I think they should be held to account for their positions when he was alive. Who's next on the who do we have next, David? Darren, welcome to WPFW.
Hi, Darren.
Hello, how are you?
Wonderful.
So I liked most of what you all have been saying. And I agree with pretty much of it, and I really like what your previous caller had to say, but I have to take a little bit of deference to it, because while I believe it's true that nonviolence is the most successful way that we can achieve peace and achieve our goals and achieve our objectives to live as a humane society, I also believe that King would not have had the level of success that he had there not been the threat of black nationalists.
I think that's a fair point. I think most revolutions have good cops and bad cops.
Right.
You know, where you basically, Martin Luther King says, look, you go with me and you give civil rights to everyone, or look, there's black power out there and they're not going to take it so nicely. And I think that's true for Mandela and Gandhi. There were always people who they said, if you don't deal with us, you're going to have to deal with people who want it violently. So I think you're right. I actually think it's kind of a pincer move. But I agree. The threat of violence often gets people to act, but the nonviolent people are the people who actually achieve it. If it's only violent, then I think it just leads to massacre and counter-massacre.
I
think it's a fair point. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Have a good day.
Thank you. Next, we're going to Aham. I hope I pronounced that right. Are we still there, Aham?
Aham? What's – I don't know the name.
I might have dropped off then. Okay, then.
I'm still here. Hello.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there we
go. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. This has been a great show. I've really enjoyed listening. Stuck in traffic, and it's made the traffic a lot more tolerable.
Yeah, that rain's hard. I drove here in it. It was tough. Go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, so just want to make a few comments. First of all, I think Nelson Mandela – in our lifetime has given us perhaps the greatest leader that we'd ever be able to analyze. And I think you know, look at the qualities that it takes to be a leader. He attributed just about every one of them, you know, starting with intelligence, a passion for a cause, an ability to get people to follow him, ability to see the other perspective of the opposition, And also, what, something that's a rare quality in leaders is an ability to change positions as needed based on the facts as they emerge and as they evolve. And Mandela, at different points in his struggle against the apartheid regime, shifted his position. Initially, he was, you know, peaceful. He realized that wasn't going to work. He took up arms, realized later on that that wasn't going to work, and met in secret with Botha, was able to compromise and reach a position that allowed the eventual end of the apartheid struggle. And you look at some of the leaders we have here and their inability to compromise and to kind of see each other's perspective results in nothing being accomplished. Now, having said that, of course, the end, as we look at it today, is not quite perhaps what the ANC supporters and Mandela himself would have wished for. They would have liked to see more equality in the economic part of things. But nevertheless, it's only really been a short time. And the blacks remain the majority there. They're getting better educated. They're getting better exposed. And with time, it's more likely than not that with perhaps some other additional intervention by the government that economic equality can be achieved. So I don't think it's fair to really castigate Mandela for failing to perhaps achieve that point. I think it's still a little bit too early to.
Well, again, South Africa is now a democracy, and they can achieve that. Look, I'm not saying economic equality is easy. Look at the United States of America. Right. Martin Luther King marched not only for civil rights but also for economic equality, and we have largely achieved the former, though not completely.
And
we have largely not achieved the latter. So, you know, that doesn't mean King wasn't a great man. It just means that that's a much, much tougher goal to achieve. So, I'm not so much casting him as reminding everyone that the goal is unfinished.
There's more work to be done,
right,
as he would say if he were alive today. And, you know, the fact of the matter is inequality has been expanded worldwide as opposed to worldwide.
That's true.
Okay, Cola, welcome to WPFW.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to WPFW.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen. Very, very good program.
Thank you.
You see, Mandela, since we're all in a position to thank him for what he has done. But you see, but the detriment aspect of it is that I'm an African from Nigeria, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at the world all over, the plight of black race, the plight of developing countries. Now, today, small Cuba is a country that can be so proud that can send doctors all over the world and all that. Can you imagine what Cuba could have been today, the day of Batista? Okay? Now, when Castro came in, he nationalized for the good of that country. Venezuela, okay? Look at other countries as well. Okay? And the plight of South Africans today, it's economically nothing that can be written good about, you know. Now, in the future, I hope what Mr. Mandela has done or what other leaders can learn from should be a lesson that will go on forever as regards black race and black plight. Because if you fight political war and you're able to achieve something, what about the economic aspect of it?
Yeah, and I hate to cut you short, but we've got a couple more calls. I want to try to give each of them a little bit of time because we got to be out by 5:55. Thank you. The time's going to be a bit more brief for our callers, but we want to get them. We got three more callers. We all want to get them in line three. Black, welcome to WPFW.
Hello?
Hi, welcome to WPFW.
Welcome. You're on the air.
Oh, I'm on air?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great. Look, I just thought I'd just add my little two cents. Of course, Mandela was, you know, a remarkable man and a huge asset to black people worldwide. I'm more of a pan-Africanist than anything. I'm not into this warm and fuzzy humanitarian blah, blah, blah. The reality is that violence is effective if it's used properly and thoughtfully. And I'm not advocating violence, but I'm just simply saying to say that peaceful nonviolent movements are always successful is really not true. That being said, I would actually say that I'm more of a fan, quite frankly, as much as I love Mandela, I'm more of a fan of one of his contemporaries, Robert Mugabe, of Zimbabwe, and what he has done for that country. And if people want to learn more about Mugabe, they need to go online and learn about his indigenization program, in which he confiscated farmland that was improperly and unlawfully taken from the natives of that country, and he reappropriated to the black natives. And they are doing successful. They're having productive crops. He has a thriving black middle class, increased trade with China. People don't learn about this because the media basically blocks this out. But there are different ways of going about freedom and liberation movements. Mandela basically worked with Western high finance, whereas Mugabe basically said no. He kicked them out, and he reconfiscated land that was basically owed to the people. And you see how Mandela is depicted as this warm and fuzzy, you know.
And I hate to cut you. I hate to cut you short.
I hate to cut you short,
but we've got two other people on the line. Not that, you know, I don't want to give, there are those who may, you know, differ with you, but we got two other people on the line, and we certainly want to give them the opportunity real quick to welcome. Who's next? Is it Paula? Paula, welcome to WPFW.
Hi, Paula.
It's Paul.
Oh, Paul.
Oh, hey, Paul.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. I'm just, you know, they always cry crocodile tears for progressive people. You know, I even think, you know, once removed, you take even someone as simple as Johnny Cash. They went out and they claimed him. They claimed Mandela. They claimed Martin Luther
King. They claimed Lincoln.
Yeah, as if they are somehow connected or represented by these voices, and it's really revolting. I would like to, you know, see a movement in this country to kind of reclaim progressive voices for the people, and to take it away from the right wing. They should be shamed any time they try to take credit for these folks. And that's just all I had to say.
Thank you very much. That's a very powerful comment, and something that I strongly agree with. You know, it's amazing. But we've got a little bit more. One more caller, Frank. We're talking about Nelson Mandela here on WPFW.
Hi, Frank.
Hello. How are you today?
Wonderful.
I will be very brief. Just like to highlight the fact that people are commenting on how soft Nelson Mandela might have been, how his story might have been watered down once set free. I'd just like to recall Nkosi Sibisi, just like the Irish Republican Army, there was a military branch and a political branch. Nelson Mandela, as a boxer, chose to participate in the military arena. Then also for his principal, I lived in Miami when he visited Miami, and Cuban Americans down there wanted him to denounce all those that came to his aid and rescue.
Yep.
He refused to do so in front of the entire world. Thank you for an excellent show.
Thank you very much. That's true. He came to the U.S. and went to South Florida, and yes, the right wing Cuban population down there, you know, was very angry at him because he wouldn't, you know, say that Cuba. They accused him, oh, you know, you're friends with Cuba. And the bottom line was, you know, and this is the reality, from my opinion, he was trying to get support to get his people some level of freedom,
right.
And he was reaching out. And, you know, any port in a storm, you know, can I blame him if he calls it? Let's face it, Reagan sure wasn't going to help him. So if he calls out and says, we're suffering, can somebody help us? And if Castro, Smastro, whoever says, hey, I'm going to help you. Oh, no. I can't accept that, for goodness sake.
Castro,
you're out
helped him for his own reasons, and I'm not defending Castro or his reign in Cuba.
No.
But I understand Mandela was reaching out to get help where he could, and, you know, it's not like he killed anyone to do it. So
it didn't make a difference where he was getting it from. And if we didn't like the fact as a country that he was taking, getting help from Castro, well, there's an easy way around that. We could have supported the free, the movement. We could have easily supported the movement. We could have gave them a lot more money. But meanwhile, we were giving money to the South African government that was oppressing them. We were supporting them.
And I think we had to remember that Mandela had a lot of help worldwide. And right here in the United States of America, the 80s was a time when people, they had shanty towns, they had apartheid villages in college campuses.
The Free South Africa t-shirt, Free Nelson Mandela t-shirts and stuff everywhere.
We had an elected government, Ronald Reagan, that was in no way supportive, but it was mostly young people, young American people. Black and white coming together saying that they had to end apartheid. And I think we eventually shamed our own government. As you said, they passed the legislation over Ronald Reagan's veto. And I think the sanctions played a major role in allowing Mandela to make the deal with Botha that he did, because I think the white South African rulers recognized that they just couldn't survive economically long enough with sanctions from the United States and other Western nations.
Right. Yeah. You know.
So let's praise not just Mandela, but everyone who worked to end apartheid in South Africa and around the world.
Yeah, and certainly and remind people that, I mean, you know, I saw a story today that in 2000, Dick Cheney said that he was not sorry that he voted against the sanctions for South Africa. So let's not forget there was a very powerful element, and you know, who still, believe it or not, Ted Cruz, before we leave, Ted Cruz, on his website, made a statement, you know, praising, you know, on his Facebook page, said, you know, this was inspirational, God, whatever, you know, what he had to say.
What is Ted Cruz?
Guess what happened? His supporters ripped him to pieces.
Really?
Yeah, his supporters looked down his Facebook wall, and they said stuff like, oh, well, this guy was a commie, this guy was terrible. You know, the Martin Luther King attack. So, you know, we certainly know there's an element in this country, we'll just call them the Tea Party, for lack of a better name, who, you know, if they had their way, we'd probably have apartheid here.
That's
just my opinion. But we're talking Nelson Mandela, and we certainly want to thank you for being a part. Mark, if they want to get in contact with you.
My website is marklivingtalk.com. You can follow me on Twitter, and I encourage you to do so because I go on TV and do all kinds of other things. So check me out. Follow me at Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevineTalk.
And Twitter and Facebook.
Facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk. It's all there. And, of course, every Friday, 6 to 7, just tune into News Views, 89.3 FM, to hear Garland and me.
Garland Nixon here. If you want to contact me on Twitter, follow me at Garland Nixon. That's G-A-R-L-A-N-D, Nixon, N-I-X-O-N. Facebook, Garland Nixon, GarlandN@gmail.com on email. And next Friday, 6 p.m., we'll see you then. And next, we've got Robin's Place coming up with Robin Holden and Carol Tyson. And there's a lot of really good music, so you would not want to change
touch
the
that
dial. Don't touch it.
WPFW family recognizes that family time is any time of year, but never more so than during the holiday season. Throughout the recorded history of music, we've been blessed by the contributions of numerous musical families. In that spirit, and in recognition of the holiday season, on Monday, December 9th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., WPFW will present a special day of music, celebrating some of the great musical families. Please join us for the following special programming on Monday, December 9th. From 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., it's the Bob Marley family. 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., the family of Fela Ransom Kuti. 11 a.m. to noon, the Jacksons. Noon to 1 p.m., Earth, Wind, and Fire with brothers Maurice and Verdine White. 1 p.m. to 2 p.m., the Marsalis family. And we round things off 2 to 3 p.m. with John, Alice, and Ravi Coltrane. That's Monday, December 9th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Please join us as WPFW 89.3 FM celebrates great musical families on your station for Jazz and Justice.
At 89.3 FM.
This is member-supported
WPFW, Washington.
Out of the tree of life, I just...
just picked me a plum. You came along and everything's starting to hum. Still, it's a real good bet the best is yet to come. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? You think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine. Wait till warm-up's underway. Wait till our lips have met. Wait till you see that sunshine day. You ain't seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? The best yet to come, come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine. I'm gonna teach you to fly, yeah. We've only tasted the wine. We're gonna drain the cup dry. Wait till the charms are ripe, those arms.